It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Yeah, that's right. This is a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR. My name is Jacob, actually, and Mercedes isn't with us today. She's away out of town. And we were going to play you all a pre-recorded show today, one from earlier in the year. But with so much going on, I'm all banged up and all the rest of it because of a bingle I had a few weeks ago. But look, I got the chance of a lift into the studio this afternoon, so I thought, there's so much going on in the world. Bugger it, I'll come in and give you a live rave without Mercedes. And so, all that being as it is, I ask you to bear in mind that I haven't been on this side of the panel for a while, and so I hope I don't bugger things up too much. And it all being a last-minute thing and not having been prepared at all, let's see how we go. See if I be a good, take this good opportunity to keep my skills up. And I can hear you. Stop laughing. Anyhow, I hope these feast days were good to you and you've seen in the new year in a manner befitting your lives. And I'm just going to get into it now and talk about a few things which you may or may not have missed. And the first thing I want to talk about is Israel's recognition of Somaliland. Actually, before I even talk about that, I want to point out that in our first show after the Bondi shootings here on a Friday Rave, we spoke about the criminal negligence of the authorities and their lack of preparedness and, of course, in their response. Some folks thought we were a tad callous at the time, straight after that, to talk about these issues, but by now others are asking those questions too. Why weren't the police there when the police were apparently told that there was chance of something bad going down? Why were there only three young coppers, the same, who would have been rostered onto Bondi, whether there was an event happening or not? Why were a number of fire trucks who were first responders that were just a few hundred yards away, apparently, not told to go down and help? They've got, all kinds of training with first aid and, well, as they're called, first responders for a reason, I guess. But anyway, people are asking a whole lot of questions. And so be prepared for a whole slew of court cases in the near future against everyone, from the organisers, to the council, to the police, to the state government, to the emergency response mob, as people seek answers to the questions of not only how is this allowed to take place, let's go right back with, the whole thing of ASIO and their knowledge about this prick who started killing people. Not just, how it was allowed to progress, but how once it happened, it was allowed to go the way it did. Anyway, really, as we said, no one should have been expecting or anticipated a mass shooting from the bridge, but I would have thought they would have expected something, a protest, an unfurling of a flag or a banner. They would have expected something to happen at such an event, and you'd think they would have prepared accordingly. But nada, nothing. It was almost as if they were willing something to happen. But anyway, Israel last week recognised Somaliland, the first nation to do so. Now, if you can imagine, as Donald Trump put it so eloquently, who really even knows what Somaliland is? He said he'll study it and then he'll make a decision because he always makes great decisions and they always turn out right. So it'll be interesting to see what his decision is. But what is Somaliland? It's a good question because I can imagine most people wouldn't be aware. Somaliland, if you can imagine a map of the Horn of Africa, Somalia goes from just west of the Horn with a coast on the Gulf of Aden, then wraps around the Horn and goes down to Kenya, I think it is. Well, Somaliland is the westernmost part of all that. So hard up against Djibouti and into Ethiopia, with its north coast off the Gulf of Aden. And that, of course, puts it directly across the Gulf of Aden from Yemen. As generally accepted, that Israel's main purpose in Somaliland would be to have a military base which could launch attacks against Yemen. But it's a bit more than that, I reckon. Now, the president of Somalia, as opposed to Somaliland, said in an interview this week that Somaliland has agreed to take in displaced Palestinians and allow military bases on its territory. Now, Somaliland has denied that. Nonetheless, people are saying they're aware of secret negotiations that took place that say that this is what Somaliland has offered in return for recognition. Okay. Where is that? I'm just looking for my notes on here. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed alleged that Israel has demanded from Somaliland, as part of its terms, that it receive displaced Palestinians from Gaza and allow the establishment of military ties. Now, what can you say? Somaliland broke away. I mean, it's always had separatist aspirations. It's never really seen itself as part of the larger country of Somalia, even back in the days of the British protectorate. It didn't see itself as being part of Somalia. It joined for a short time, but then tried to break away, and it's trying to be recognised as independent since 1991. That's 35 years. Israel news outlet has reported the recognition of Somaliland came after months of secret negotiations. Okay, so they're talking about, no doubt they're talking about ethnic cleansing, genocide of Palestinians from Gaza. And they've needed somewhere to go for some time. They were talking about Ethiopia, and Ethiopia is one of the few countries, doesn't recognise officially Somaliland, but it has deep ties with Somaliland and leases a part of the port on the Gulf of Aden. I'm just bringing back my map back up here. On the Gulf of Aden, the port of Berbera, which is operated by Israel. So it's all tied in there anyway. As I said, I wasn't planning on coming in to broadcast live today, so my backgrounding on Somaliland is not what I would have liked it to be. But, you know, if you can judge politics by who a person or people hang out with, I guess the most I can say is that their biggest backers over the last dozen years or so, since they've been talking in earnest about independence, has been the UAE, another supporter of Israel, and that bastion of egalitarianism and human rights from the UK, Nigel Farage, who's been about their most strident supporter in recent times. The rest of the world haven't been so forthcoming in their praise of Somaliland. As I said, he said, does anyone know what Somaliland is really? Saudi Arabia has affirmed its full support for the territorial integrity of Somalia. Turkey has said it's another example of Netanyahu's government's unlawful actions aimed at creating instability. Qatar has rejected the recognition, said it was a dangerous precedent and a unilateral action. It would be more appropriate for the Israel occupation authorities to recognise the state of Palestine rather than to undermine international legitimacy. Sudan also gave strong condemnation of the, quote-unquote, of the Israeli occupiers' recognition of the Somali region of Somaliland, which violates international law. And that's what they're all saying, basically. And Yemen, the other, Palestinian Authority, obviously, has condemned the development. The other people who have condemned it, of course, is Yemen. The leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah, the resistance movement, a bloke by the name of Abdul Malik al-Houthi, warned on the 28th of December that any potential Israeli presence in Somaliland will be considered a military target, as it constitutes an aggression on Somalia and Yemen and a threat to the security of the region. We will not accept that part of Somalia be turned into a foothold for the Israeli enemy at the expense of Somalia's independence, sovereignty and security of the Somali people and the region and the Red Sea. So that's what's going on there. And I've got to say, the other thing I want to say is that if you're a fledgling nation that's been after recognition from the Security Council, from the UN, from the world community for 30-odd years, and Israel was the only one sticking their hands up to say, oh, no, we'll do the right thing by your son, wouldn't you be a tad concerned? That's all I can say. In other news, staying in Israel for a minute, Israel has banned aid organisations for Gaza. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about this because this has been, I won't say all over the mainstream media, but it has at least been reported on. Medicine Sans Frontières, World Vision, Oxfam, Caritas, and more than a couple of dozen others have been banned from working in Gaza for anti-Semitism. Absolutely disgusting. Israel's going to halt operations in 37 international humanitarian organisations in Gaza from the 1st of January. And the Australian government continues to support Israel. I mean, they say they don't, but they do. There's no question about it. Anyway, we need to do something. Surely the rest of the world, the time has come. Anyway, that's not all Israel has done in the last week or two, in the last week. Where are we? I'm just looking for this next little piece that's saying that Israel government has targeted Australians and provided a list of Australian anti-Semitic influences. People like Adam Bandt, Mehreen Faruqi, Free Palestine Movement, Robert Martin, Tim Anderson, Anthony Lowenstein, Nasser Mashidi, which is basically doxing Australian activists who are standing up against genocide. And the Australian government falls for this. And the Victorian government, New South Wales government, time and time again. Now, they may not be using this list, but what they're doing, what everybody, every official organisation, government organisation, police force, intelligence agency, whatever, is doing, is they're laying the blame for Bondi and the apparently millions of other anti-Semitic attacks around Australia, which we all know are by and large criticism of the state of Israel. Now, I'm not saying there is no anti-Semitism. Of course there is. There's always been anti-Semitism in Australia and Islamophobia. Just like there's been, you know, racism against blackfellas, and not so much now, but even when I was a lad, racism against Dagos like me before the Asian started coming to Australia and gave the Nazis and the fascists and the racists somebody else to be racist about. But this is what the Israel government's doing, and the Australian government is playing into it 100%. And they're spinning out in so many expanding and contracting circles that it's given me vertigo. You know, on the one hand, they're putting mild sanctions on a couple of senior Israeli pollies for some of the nasty things they've said. But on the other hand, they're inviting the president, Isaac Herzog, to the country, officially, as head of state. Now, Isaac Herzog has been named individually in International Criminal Court bloody discussions on genocide, Israeli genocide, taking place on Gaza and in Palestine. So elbow, you can see, Albanese is in a bind. He knows what's right. He knows Herzog's a scum sucking low life genocide peddling warmonger. He knows that. But what can he say? He can't upset the Israeli lobby. And he also can't upset the United States. So we can throw out a couple of mild sanctions here and there against people like Yalan and Gvir and all the rest of it. But at the same time, he supports Israel. But the US president last week, where are we up to? The US president had Netanyahu at his Florida resort. Let me just bring up the bit I've written about that, what I want to say about that. And it turns out that Trump has said he's going to sanction Israel to attack Iran to strike its ballistic missiles. Now, what does that mean? Is he just going to allow it and say go ahead? Or is he going to provide intelligence to do it? Is he going to provide information gleaned from places like Pine Gap, which is where the Five Eyes satellites that look over, that provide all the, the signals intelligence over Iran to the United States war machine, all happens in Pine Gap. Is he going to provide that information to Israel? In which case, the US is involved. And so are we. And mind you, he's talking now, the change here is before they were saying they were just going to strike their missile programs. You know, their missile program being their factories and their enrichment facilities or whatever that they reckon they had, which we've got no proof of. But those are one or two places in the country. Now, the thing with ballistic missile launching sites is that they can be anywhere. They can be like Hamas control centres in Gaza, hidden in hospital car parks and in schools, in suburbia, in shopping centres, anywhere. Anywhere Israel and the United States and Australia, because as I say, it's coming from Australia, if they're talking about attacking ballistic missile launching pads, then anywhere Israel, the United States and Australia says is a ballistic missile launching pad is. And this is open. This is different to attacking their enrichment facilities or their missile development program. So this is going to be huge. It could be huge. Don't know whether they'll go ahead with it, but who knows. And not only is he giving them the go-ahead to do that, but he's also, said that they're going to fund $8.6 billion for more F-35 fighter jets, F-15s and F-35 fighter jets to go to Israel because they need more air power because poor old Israel is under attack. And all of these planes, whether they're F-35s or F-15s, are going to have parts made in Australia. And Australia will be complicit. And now that this has been announced, now that this deal is done, it's the perfect opportunity for the Australian government to say no, no more. But they're not, are they? They're not going to do that. And staying with our US overlords just for a little while, Nigeria, Christmas Day bombings, bomb villages on Christmas Day, supposedly for part of a, to counteract an Islamic genocide on Nigeria. How the hell did we get here? The Nigerian government has sanctioned it, but of course it's about the whole they're not bombing the coast in Nigeria. It's all in the inland in the Sahel corridor. It is all about what we've been talking about on a Friday rave for some time now. Jeez, I'm running out of time. Access to the mineral resources of the Sahel. And it's about exerting control for the United States, friendly government in Nigeria, to keep selling its resources to friendly American companies, not Chinese or Russian ones. That's what that's about, folks. And then we got Venezuela. I mean, I keep saying it. We're going to have to talk about Venezuela for weeks on end because everything comes up and we push Venezuela to the end again. Sorry, Venezuelans. But one Venezuela oil tanker, the Bella One, that the US, you know, the US has seized another one, but they're attempting to seize the Bella One off the coast of Venezuela. And that has now been re-registered under a new name, the Marinera, with its home port listed as Sochi, a Russian city on the Black Sea. And they've painted a flag, a Russian flag, on its hull. And Russia has requested the Trump administration, just in the last 24 hours, to stop their pursuit of the tanker. Now, we don't know what's going to happen there. But, you know, as I say, they've already stolen two tankers worth of oil of Venezuela when he's called a complete and total blockade, but it's actually piracy on the high seas. We know that. But now that Russia has stepped in, will this be enough for the Americans to say, you know, well, okay, we're going to let this one go? And it's not just a tanker. There have been reports that American missiles have hit, President Trump has claimed that US missiles hit a big facility, drug facility, on the coast of the Venezuelan government. Now, Maduro hasn't responded to that. He was asked by a reporter on Monday, and he admitted, doesn't matter, there was an explosion in the dock area where they load the boats up, you know, but he hasn't... Maduro's admitted there was an explosion, but nothing about a strike. Nothing at all about a strike. So we don't know what's happening there. So that's the roundup of where the US is killing people at the moment. And if you're wondering where all this is heading, the last thing I want to mention in the couple of minutes I've got left, and really I could do a whole two-hour show on this, things like, what are they called? Polymarket and Kalshi. These are betting agencies, like sports bet type of things, that allow you to bet on world events. How many Gazans will be killed by the end of this month, by the end of this week, whatever? What day will the US attack Venezuela? Normalizing the whole idea of betting on tragic events. But there's more to it. They reckon that by utilising the wisdom of the crowd, they can give people a better indication of what to expect in the coming period. And maybe I'll talk to Mercedes. We'll do a whole show on this one day soon. But anyway, where's it coming from? You know, both Polymarket and Kalshi have Donald Trump Jr. listed as an advisor, so who knows what's happening. The head of Kalshi has said this is part of his gig. What he wants to do is financialize everything, monetize everything. So next time some kid gets amputated in Gaza or amputated by a bomb because Medicine Sans Frontieres won't be working there anymore. Someone in America or in Australia has made a buck out of it. This is 2026 we're going into, people. Hope you're all having a good time. Mercedes and I will be back tomorrow morning, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock as we fill in during the time slots of Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remembered. So talk more at you then.
private life so public as the tabloids caught your tears being photographed.
How sad. How tragic. But it doesn't have to be that way on the Burning Vinyl Alternative Music Program.
Burning Vinyl, Fridays, 2 till 4 p.m. on 3CR.
Hopefully we can protect everything that's worth protecting on country and keep all warmongers out.
Well, I won't back down.
Cougatha elder Arnie Sue Hasseldine is fighting to protect her country from Southern Launch's rocket testing range. Southern Launch's collaborations with international weapons companies such as Thales, as well as the Australian Defence Force, are threatening sacred sites, endangered animals and unique ecosystems. Join West Mallee Protection, letter writing calling on key decision makers to get Southern Launch off Gugatha country. For more information, visit West Mallee Protection on Instagram. West Mallee Protection is a 3CR supporter.
And I won't back down.
You're listening to Slacker Radio. 3CR 855 AM, 3cr.org.au.
Yeah, that's right. And just before the break, at the top of the block, we're listening to Elmo Aoyama. Apologies once again for ruining the name there. Aoyama means Blue Mountain.
Oh,
there you go.
That's lovely.
Isn't it just... the track was called Demons.
That was cool.
Yeah. We were chatting about that one. It's got a lot of nice texture going on. It's both crunchy and creamy.
Which is a good way to eat your food. So, yeah, creamy base, crunchy drums.
Yep.
Breadcrumbs on top of pasta bake.
Yeah.
Corn chips in your soft taco, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Really good.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. And then following that, we heard from Snail Gun.
Yeah.
Who we played the start of that track. A couple of weeks ago at the end of our last show, but we only got about 30 seconds into it, and that song goes for 6.5 minutes. That was...
What a... Like, it's just putting in work on that bass guitar for a whole 6 minutes.
Yeah, real power trio stuff, because there's a extensive guitar solo going on there, and it's just bass and drums for the rest of it.
Yeah.
That guitar solo in particular, I think the... most prominent influence I could name is the Wipers, but also not afraid to just sit on one note for a little while, much like someone who haven't played enough of on this show, Neil Young. Ever heard of him?
Yeah, I have.
More like Neil Old these days.
Yeah, part of old. The song Old Man, he just calls Man now.
Killer guitar, and just like patient, like building it up further and up and up the neck, you know, very repetitive kind of lines, you know, not adding too many notes until like right at the end where we're adding all the like discordant notes and everything. Love it. We love some good electronic guitar here. We do. And I'm so glad that here at the start of the year we get to fire off a Masky, I believe.
Yeah.
This is the J Maskers Memorial Award for... outstanding contribution in the field of the electronic guitar. Congratulations, Snail Gun. Love your work.
Love it.
Love it.
Happy New Year, Snail Gun. Very much deserved.
Yes, yes, very much. Yeah. So, what a lot of fun. We love to have a bit of fun around here. Some people look for their fun in the realm of K-pop.
Okay.
And it's not ketamine pop.
No. That's different...
That's like Grimes and stuff from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a dated reference. I don't know. We're talking about Korean pop. The old Kankoku. There's a band around. I've never heard of them. They're called New Jeans.
Okay.
And...
cool name.
Cool name. This... headline I've got here from the Australian Beautiful Company, written by Mawunyo Gubogo. Sorry, that's an African name and I have butchered it. And I'm not really sure how to like pronounce a G going into a B.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gubog. Sorry. I'm sorry. I tried. Australian K-pop idol Danielle dropped from New Jeans and sued for more than $44 million. Now, I thought that was like Jeans West.
Yeah, like a company that makes jeans, yeah. Brand ambassador on yeah, the posters.
Yeah, Just Jeans.
Okay, yeah. yep, sure.
The band is called Just Jeans. Anyway, this lady's been sued for $44 million.
Now, that is an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, I didn't know there was that much money left in music, but from what I understand, K-pop and just like the idol scene in general is just huge amounts of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's loads and loads that goes into it. And Daniel's actually from Newcastle.
Okay.
Kind of grew up between South Korea and Newcastle. An Australian member of the K-pop group New Jeans is being sued for around $44.8 million by the group's record label. New Jeans member Danielle Marsh, born in Newcastle, was removed from the group after her record label Adore, that's A-D-O-R, like love, is that?
Maybe,
yeah, anyway, terminated her contract. Adore then announced it would sue Danielle, one of her family members, and former CEO Min Hee Jin for alleged breach of contract, according to the BBC. Other members of New Jeans are Honey, who was born here in Melbourne, Minji, Hyodin, and Hyein, couldn't say. They became the eighth biggest selling act in the world after their debut in 2022, which is...
Whoa.
Yeah, massive. Like, for a band I've never heard of in my life.
And is that... Are we to take that to mean the eighth biggest selling act of all acts in the world? Like, or just K-pop? Like, that's still...
Whatever it is.
Tremendously.
Tremendously huge.
Yeah.
Hebei Corporation is the home of K-pop sensation BTS and the parent company of Adore. New Jeans announced it was leaving Adore in 2024, alleging workplace harassment, which the agency has denied.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they?
They would. Any employer would deny that. But I don't know if listeners at home are familiar with, like, the idol culture in, you know, Japan and Korea that they've got going over there. But it's intense.
Yeah.
It is intense. Like, to be an idol, you kind of get plucked up from youth, basically, and put through these agencies. Everything is... It's not like you're writing your own songs and being creative. They're kind of like marketing this image from the very, very start.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're fully produced album quality stuff for your like first demo kind of thing.
And you're not able to say as a member of the band, we'll take a year off from touring and just like write another album or whatever. Like, you'll be on someone else's schedule.
Yeah, I'm gonna do an acoustic album next or whatever. Like, it's very much, it's a very controlling environment down to like, it's kind of like being an athlete, like what you eat and, you know, where you can be seen in public and like all kinds of things like that. I have no trouble believing that there was workplace harassment going on in it.
Undoubtedly.
Like, that is such a highly controlling environment. It is prime for people who are going to behave poorly to do that, to like very, very young, usually girls. Well, I mean, there's boy bands as well, but like generally when you're talking about like J-pop idols, K-pop idols, we're talking about high school girls. Adore, that's the record company, has since terminated its contract with Danielle and is now taking legal action, accusing her of bearing significant responsibility for the fallout between the agency and the group. So this is another thing that I just find wild. Like, bands get dumped from labels all the time in rock and roll. This is just something that happens, you know, like you make an unpopular album or, you know, you're just not selling well enough or we've decided that we're going for a different thing and you just get dropped from your label.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. In this case, it's like they've tried to break their contract and because of that, we're suing you for $44 million.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, then they're saying, like, we're not going to let you break the contract. How dare you? Mm. We're going to break the contract with you.
Yeah.
You can't fire me. You can't quit. We fire you.
Yeah, yeah. So, in April 2024, Hebei accused Min, that's the former CEO, of attempting to seize control of Adore and plotting to gain full ownership of New Jeans to take the group independent. So
yeah, it sounds like it was probably a necessary thing to plot, yeah. If that's the case.
Min denied all allegations and called a press conference to elaborate. Hebei then filed a police report against Min. Like, this is... Oh,
yeah.
For what?
Yeah. Like, yeah, on what grounds?
I don't know. Maybe defamation? Yeah. I don't know. A legal battle ensued in which all five members of New Jeans took Min's side, supporting her petition against Hebei, removing her as CEO.
Cool.
Forbes reports that in July of 2024, Danielle wrote a handwritten letter to Min pointing to a deep emotional bond between them, foreshadowing Danielle's loyalty to Min. So, okay, like...
Yep.
Is that a crime? Is that...
No, yeah. Like, is it a crime to like your boss? I mean, it's not.
Maybe it should be. Mm. I don't know. But if they're also like, hey, you guys are getting treated like trash and you'd be way better off independent, the company's sucking up all of your money, I want to start a new thing with you guys, let's do it smaller and better,
I'd probably say yes.
Yeah.
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 I'd be on board for that.
So Min was sacked as CEO in August of 2024. And then here's a really, really interesting part. According to Forbes, a November 2024 ruling that K-pop idols are not classified as workers under Korean labor law raises industry-wide implications affecting how workplace harassment complaints are handled. How on earth is living the lifestyle of an idol where, like, your every sentence and action and what you put in your body and having to go out and make appearances at shopping centers and shake people's hands and sign autographs and all this thing, your schedule's planned out for years in advance... How is that not work?
That is so much work, and that is so many different types of work.
Yeah.
That when other people who are considered workers perform that work,